Welcome again, podcast number two, The Known Unknowns. We appreciate you joining us. As promised, we're going to get into some talk about the Old Testament, about some of the, you know, it's not going to be real in-depth, and we're not in any position to be doing Bible studies, but we'll talk and give a little bit of opinion. We'll see if we can find some stuff we disagree on. So what we were talking about getting into last time, and this is the kind of cliffhanger I left on the last podcast, was that I had I don't know if I said I figured it out, but I'm pretty sure I heard a pastor say this. I want to make sure I don't take credit for it, because I didn't figure this out. I heard a pastor say it, but it's just the idea. I mean, if you're hearing that story for the first time, or even going back and reading it, I just read it again because I'm going back and trying to read the Bible. But you have Abraham, who's waited his whole life. He's waited 100 years to have Isaac, and Isaac is the fulfillment of everything that God has promised him, and he's the vehicle for how everything that God has promised Abraham is going to come to pass. And then all of a sudden, God wants Abraham to kill Isaac. And, you know, it's like you don't understand. And then he's right there. He's got the knife. He's going to kill him. And then, oh, no, you don't have to do it. And I can't tell you how many people that I've talked to that were, like, non-believers that kind of throw that in your face. Like, he's just... You know, who would do that? What God would do that? What point is that? But I heard a pastor saying it made total sense. Is God is giving you a really great insight into what he is going to have to do when he gives his only son, when he has to sacrifice Jesus to save our sin. I think what God had to do with Jesus was kind of unimaginable, the way that he took on the sin of the world, and the way he was crucified and all this stuff, and with God had the power to stop it, but he wanted to create a way for redemption for us, so he gives his son. And so this is kind of a bringing you in to the decision making with what God's doing, what he's going through. Don't you think, Josh?
Yeah, and I think just to give some context to the scenario, Abraham is coming from like a polytheistic world where, like, most people around him believe in multiple gods. Abraham himself believed in multiple gods before God intervened in his life, and so he's, like, having to make this tough decision. I think this is also, like, a story a little bit of, like, God choosing Abraham. I think this, like, is part of the test. I really like what you're saying. I think there's a lot of truth to that, and, like, when you hear it for the first time, when you, like, you know, like you said, you go back and read it, it really puts you in that place. And I think that it's a lot easier to be more empathetic for what God would have to go through. Jesus is his son, and he is going to have to watch and sacrifice his son. I think so, like, this story is a great story to kind of give you some empathy for what's going to happen later.
There is one example where God is showing you a choice that he has to make. And Job is another one that people like to throw at you, where Job is just this, you know, punching bag that God uses to you show the devil that, you know, that he has this faithful servant, and it's all just a big pissing contest between God and the devil, and Job ends up being the loser of the bit. But if you look at the things that Job goes through, I think it's some of the worst things that people can go through in their life. And I think that it was less about God trying to prove a point to the devil than it was that he understood the nature of true believers. People have faith in God. He understood the nature of Job. And I think it's a great example that we can take into our lives, that no matter what we what happens to us, we don't blame God, because Job could literally blame God. You know, God had let these things happen to him, and so Job could literally say, "This is all your fault, God. Why are you doing this to me?" But he doesn't do it. And it shows the character of the man. But there's a lot of people that will just they'll use these things and say, "Well, what kind of God does that? What kind of God does this or that?" You know, and it's like, I think these are people that don't understand the nature of God. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I think that, like, I mean, it's a concept that I've like come to hear lately is like the idea that, and like I think a lot of people who don't believe in God one of the biggest arguments is the evil argument. Why would a God allow there to be evil things, and why do bad things happen? And like an idea that I have just, you know, been pondering and thinking about whatever, is the idea that you're better off ultimately for having the bad things happen. You know, like, I think that it makes you appreciate the good things. I think that it makes you're able to see the good things more clearly, like when you have bad things. I mean, I'm not trying to justify like all these evil acts, but I'm saying that I think that you appreciate just a normal day if you've had a shitty week.
Sure. Well, and I think, you know, I think too, it goes back to the idea of what free will is, and to truly have free will. See, this is a thing that I've had to look at myself, because I had kind of two different childhoods. I had part of my childhood, I was very sort of sheltered, and then part of my childhood, I got mercilessly picked on, and my, you know, family was poor, and Joshua was my brother, but he was born 10 years after me, so he and I had a little bit of a different experience growing up with this sort of turmoil of our family. But with my kids, I am like the hoverer. I am the helicopter parent. I'm willing to beat up kids on the playground for my kids, you know, and that kind of thing. And I see a psychologist, and he's told me, you have to let things happen to them. They have to go through things. They have to develop coping skills for things like that. And that's part of it. Being your character comes from the good and the bad, and even more probably specifically the bad. But it's just people don't take into account free will. And there's a reason that the choice is, there's a reason for the choice. That's something that's clear, because of all the things in the Bible, of all the information thrown at us, at the end of the day, it's, do you choose to believe that Jesus died for you on the cross? It's, there is a, with the way this world works in the next, choice is necessary. And so for choice to actually matter, you have to have absolute free will, to where the choice is not in any way, shape, or form made for you. You have to make that. And with free will comes all of the, you know, bad in the world, all of the evil in the world, all of the sickness, all of the things that festers with the...
Yeah, I mean, that's the very concept of free will, of having a choice, is there being a wrong choice, or something bad, or something else, a choice. The only way that you can have a choice is there's two options. And so, I mean, I'm under I don't think that you can even have good without having evil.
Maybe not on this earth. It's an interesting concept, but I think that heaven probably is a, well, you know, it's an interesting thing to ponder. Because on the one hand, you could say, well, is heaven a perfectly good place? And you would think so, but the devil was an angel in heaven, you know, so what corrupted him if heaven is all good? Is it possible to sin while in heaven?
You know, right, but it's like, here comes a really weird kind of pondered question. It's like that, like, if you need free will, you like, if you want to give people free will, you have to give people the negative. So then you need that, right? You need Lucifer to rebel.
Well, yeah, that's sort of the question of it all. Why does Satan exist? Where did that come from? If God is only good and he created everything, then where did evil come from? And if evil exists, you know, if they have to coexist on this world, but everything came from God, you know, then where is it that the idea of evil even came from? But yeah, I mean, the devil was there from the beginning of man. He was there in the Garden of Eden. He's who tempted. So, you know, I think that there are things worth pondering like this. But I also think that there are things that we're not going to understand until we can sort of see beyond the veil of what this world is. To truly understand how it all works.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, some other, you know, I think we're, you know, kind of jumping from topic to topic, but some other ideas is that is God all knowing? Do you think that God is omnipotent? Is he all knowing?
Omnipotent.
Omnipotent is all powerful. Omnipotent is all knowing. So do you, and then
about onomatopoeia.
And there's also omnibenevolent, all good. I think some of the like philosophical debates on why do we have evil, I think that like some people reject one of those three.
Right.
There's a classic paradox with omnipotent, all powerful. Whereas, if God is all powerful, then he can create something that he can't lift. But if he created something that he couldn't lift, then he's not powerful. Then he wouldn't be all powerful. So there's like this, like some paradoxes and stuff like that. And so there's like, there's parts in the Bible.
Well, but see, I think, like when you say that to me, what I can conceive of is that there are limitations to like what we can think of in our dimension. Because, you know, I don't know if did we talk about the dimensions at all last time in the podcast?
No, I don't think we even really got into like yours and me, like personal philosophies.
Well, if you were in the, and I'll make this a brief thing, but if you lived in the two-dimensional world, you would only see like what's around you. You couldn't look up, you couldn't look down. It would be a, you know, obviously a flat surface. So that if I was in the third dimension, if you were in two dimension and you were in a room surrounded by four walls, well, if I was in the third dimension and looked down on you, I could see you. I could be there with you, but you couldn't see me. You couldn't look up, so you couldn't even conceive of up, because up's not even a thing. You're right. Two-dimensional, so there is no up. So mm-hmm. You don't even conceive of looking up or down. So I could be there in the room with you, and you wouldn't even conceive of the fact that I was there, but I would be there. And then if I stuck my finger down, all of a sudden I would appear in front of you and then disappear. And it would be, you know, to you something that you couldn't conceptualize. And so I think that as far as how God's power for being all powerful and all knowing, I think that there are some things that we can't conceive of in the fourth dimension, because we live in the third dimension. We also live in the fourth dimension. The fourth dimension is time. You know, the three dimensions are obviously space. And then the fourth dimension is time. We can only go forward in time. So we do exist in the fourth dimension, but we can only move in one direction. And see, I think that God can move in any direction in time. And what's interesting is, like, we look at time and we think about going forward and backwards. Okay, but going forward and backward in time is very limited. Imagine going sideways in time. Imagine going diagonal in time. You know, it's a completely a different thing that's hard to even really conceptualize, you know, what that means and how that works. And so I think that there are some aspects of God where when people say, well, he's everywhere all at once, and you go, well, how is that even possible? But if he's in a higher dimension, a well higher dimension, there's probably a conceptual way where he physically could be. You know, it's even like a thing, and I'll wrap this up, but if time, and I'm not saying this is what I believe, but like if time was a flat circle, always revolving and going around, and you were like Bill Murray in Groundhog Day, where you were somehow, it was like a record, but you were somehow able to, you know, control it, play it, whatever. Well, wouldn't you know everything? Wouldn't you be all powerful in that world if you knew exactly how everything was going to go, because it was a repeating? So I don't know. I look at whenever people talk about God being all knowing, all powerful, and all good, I feel like that maybe we cannot quite conceptualize how that could be possible. The idea that God, if God can make anything, can he make something that he couldn't pick up? But, you know, once you, I think, get into higher dimensions, then the idea of the ideas of how all of that works sort of become arbitrary, maybe. I don't know. That's kind of my take on to sort of halfway explain some of that.
Yeah, I mean, I've got, just a couple of things to say about that. You know, first of all, you're talking about the, you know, different dimensions and planes of existence and things like that. And this is, I'm sure I've told you, but you know, this is very similar to Plato's theory, algorithm of like the cave, where you have a group of people that their entire life have lived chained to the wall of a cave, and all they know of life, all they can see is the shadows of these people. People behind them are holding things up in front of a fire, and then all they can see is the shadows on the wall. And so that's all that they know of life, is just shadows. And so, like you were saying, like a two-dimensional reality. But then one day they're able to break out of the cave, and they go into the real world, and they see this three-dimensional world. And this is how Plato viewed reality, that we're experiencing only shadows of what things are, and everything that we see, it would just be like we're seeing, like you said, just one dimension of it.
Right.
Whereas there's like other dimensions and things like that that we can, you know, conceptualize, just right, because we have no frame of reference for. The other thing is, I mean, you, when you're talking about time, the way that I think about time is that time is, I think time is simultaneous. And so there's a pretty big idea in like my personal philosophies and way of train of thought or whatever, is the concept of eternity. So the definition of eternity is without beginning or end. So how do you enter into that existence, right? If you were to one day be in that, you would, that would have been the beginning, at least for you. So you would have to have always existed in that principle. So my idea is that we are, we are currently in eternity, and the way that time works, think about, like, imagine somebody 50 years ago has a string attached to their foot, and whenever they take a step, the string that's attached to your foot gets pulled, which pulls the foot of a man 50 years into the future. And it's just a way of thinking of, like, how all of our actions are a direct result of what's happened before. And you can see how that's happening because of that. They're happening together. Right. So this idea that, like, time is just this current thing, and that it's just ongoing, but not like, not necessarily like lineal, but like just like this thing, right? And this, I'm, you know, not a great way to describe it, but this goes into, like, the, it's, you know, hard to conceptualize. But the way that time is moving is, it's all together. And I think another way that I've thought about this is, like, imagine all you could see was a river. Then it's very easy to see which way the water is flowing, right? When you're looking at a river. But if you scale out and look at the earth, you can see all the water is kind of flowing into itself. It's just kind of flowing around. I think that once you have, like, an eternal viewpoint, eternal perspective, you would see that time's kind of flowing back into itself.
Well, and God says he's the beginning and the end. There, I think that he chooses his words very particularly, especially in the Bible. So, you know, this idea that, and that's why, see, that's why I think that there are some things that are worth thinking about, but I also think that it's like trying to learn math and only having half a book or something. You know, we just don't have the information. I find it so funny how science, you know, people, the scientists and all this, they tell us all this stuff about space. They tell us all these things, all these certainties out there. Well, it was and it's all based on math. It's all based on the probability that this is probably happening and yada, yada, yada. And to me, that sounds just, that to me is not science. I kind of think that space is going to end up being something like, and this is something I actually came up with, but I guess it's sort of a different version of Plato's cave thing, but I think that space, when we find out how everything actually works, that space is going to be kind of like if you were born in a room, an enclosed room, totally enclosed, and all the walls were mirrors. And if you were born in that room and you had no idea what was beyond that room, as far as you knew, that was the only space that existed, was this room that was just mirrors. And so you could think, you could sit there and go, okay, well, all right, look, this is how math works inside of the space that is defined to me, but I can obviously see that there is, you know, an almost infinite amount of space that's beyond some barrier. And so if I apply the math that works inside of the room to what must be beyond the room that I can't see. Because if you look into obviously if you are in a room full of mirrors, it just looks like it goes on and on and on and on. You know, it's just a reflection on of a reflection of a reflection. And I think that, you know, you could go, okay, well, look, math equations tell me that there's got to be another room out there somewhere, and there's probably billions of rooms out there, and there's, so if there's billions of rooms, then there's all kinds of possibilities of all the people that could be. And then one day somebody opens a door and you walk outside and see that you've been in this room and all you were seeing was reflections. I just, you know, I feel like there's a lot of things about this world that people, scientists, and this science is almost like a new religion. But you have people all the time saying, I believe in science. Well, what do you mean believe in science? It's just facts. You just, science just is. You don't have to believe in it. But that's what it's become. And all science trying to explain all these things that basically they know that you can't answer. I mean, there's even parts of me that doubt there was ever a past. There's parts of me that doubts there was anything that ever existed before me. That everything is just that's before, like the modern times, have never happened. It's all just stories. And I think that we really take for granted what reality is. And see, I think the difference between my opinion and other people that ponder these things is, for some reason, people get to this point and go, well, if I'm going to start thinking of all these crazy concepts, why, well, I have to forget God, because he doesn't fit into, you know, but I mean, God fits into it perfectly. You know, if he created it, I mean, there's a guy, and I don't want to go on for too long, but there's a guy that says that the sun, and he's just came out with this theory like late last year. He says that the sun is not a gas, it's a liquid. And he shows all of these proofs, and I'm not a scientist, I don't know a whole lot, but the video is incredibly convincing, and the guy's not like a crackpot. He like helped invent a new way to do like CT scans and revolutionize science, and somehow was able to keep applying that into the point where he said that it's just impossible to think that the sun's a gas. And if the sun is not a gas, if the sun is a liquid, then the Big Bang could have never happened. Nothing that we think about the universe is plausible. And if you watch the guy's video, I wish I could think of his name, but if you're listening and you're interested, you just have to go on YouTube and type in like, the sun is liquid, or something. That it's a doctor that he's got a couple of videos on there, and like a bald guy with glasses. But I mean, when he lays out his case, it seems like it's pretty obvious. Now, again, I don't have the scientific background, but imagine that if he's right. Imagine if the sun is a liquid, and the Big Bang and all that stuff that they've said is completely irrelevant and doesn't make any sense. That means that the universe is just one big mystery that we still haven't gotten any closer to figuring out. As a matter of fact, everything that we know is based on bullshit. I think that when people exclude God from the thought process about the reality of the universe, then you're just missing a whole piece of the puzzle.
Yeah. For sure. I think that, like, I like science, but I think that, like, a huge element of science is like explaining what you see. It's like, you know, based, like you said, based on like mathematics and observations and studies, I think, like that. But I think a pretty important element of science is that it is always questioning itself. It's always,
well, that's what real science is. That's not what people do today. Neil deGrasse Tyson doesn't want to answer your questions. He just wants you to shut up and listen to him tell you things. It's real obvious whenever he goes into interviews and people start asking him of questions that are out of his wheelhouse. He gets pretty irritated pretty quickly. And that's kind of what you have with a lot of these, especially sort of celebrity type scientists, that they just want you to take what they say. Don't question it. It's almost like a new religion. It's what the people that sort of corrupted Christianity, the priests that they could read the Bible but none of the parishioners could, and so they use it to lie and manipulate. And they were, you know, they were the well, you can't read the book, only I can, so listen to me. I know everything, I'm smart enough to know what you can't. This is what God told me to tell you. You know, and those are people that gave Christianity a bad name, and I think that's what a lot of scientists now, like, well, these equations are too much for you, but just believe me, we're probably living in a simulation. That's what Neil deGrasse Tyson's people say. We're probably living in a simulation. Are you kidding me? You telling me that it's completely implausible that God created the universe, but you're going to tell me that we're probably living in a simulation? I mean, geez. Give me a break.
Yeah. Well, I mean, God could be running the simulation.
For sure, and I think to some extent it is a simulation. I mean, I don't know. You know, I think all kinds of different things about heaven, but one of the best pictures I think that I've ever gotten of heaven is from The Great Divorce, from that C.S. Lewis book.
Yeah.
Have you ever read that?
Yeah, it's a cool concept for sure. I really liked the concept of hell in that book.
Well, he doesn't even really talk about hell. He's kind of talking about almost like a purgatory.
No, that's hell.
I think he's acting like it's because you can leave it, and it's like it's
self-imposed.
That's the way of free will. Because at the end of the story, it gets worse. So I think that it's like almost like a purgatory type of thing that these people that are I don't know. I have to read the book again, but I got the sense that was like a precursor that almost like, you know, it's like if you die now, you don't, you know, it's we're not going to all go to heaven until Jesus comes and takes everybody. So you don't, you know, this is all kind of murky because I don't exactly understand it and haven't read enough, but it's like I don't really believe in the Catholic idea of purgatory, but there's this idea that, like, you know, people like Moses or whatever, people that have died before in the past, that they're not in heaven yet, that there's going to be a final judgment day, and then that's when everybody goes to heaven.
I think the idea of that, and this is, same disclaimer, I haven't done too much research. My understanding of that concept is like, when people would ask Christians what happened to Moses or Abraham or these like grand Jewish characters, because like I think that a huge principle of Christianity is that you have to believe in Jesus in order to get into heaven. So obviously, I mean, the whole basis is that God was walking through Moses and Joshua and these characters. So what happened to them when they died? Because they didn't have a chance to hear about Jesus, learn about Jesus. And so I think the idea was that they were suspended in like a middle ground, like they weren't allowed access to Christian heaven, but they didn't go to hell, that they were suspended in purgatory until and I think it's the same. I think there is like an idea that nobody will gets to go to heaven until the, you know, second coming,
you know. But there's also parts of the Bible where it talks about people being in heaven and sitting at the throne of God and all this, and so I don't know, you know. And I would think with people like before Jesus came, it seems like that those people, Moses and Abraham people, that those were the people that actually did get to go to heaven, that it was very difficult to get to heaven with all the, you know, sacrifices and the atonement for sin and things that you had to do, and that after Jesus came, that was the grace where it became a lot easier. It didn't take as much as it did before. I mean, you know, it feels really weird talking about heaven this way. And I think it's this whole concept of something that we don't quite understand. I think that's what is so difficult for some people when you approach them about Christianity, is that heaven is such an abstract idea. God is such like an sort of an abstract, ambiguous concept to try to wrap your mind around, and that you're going to base your whole life and your belief on this idea that you're going to get somewhere that you know nothing about and be in the presence of somebody that you can't possibly understand. And so I think it's harder for people to look at that and come into the faith. But it's when you're in the presence of God, there's nothing else that feels like it. And I think that there's a reason that I think there's multiple reasons why we don't get to understand what heaven is beforehand. And I think chief among all those reasons is, again, I just don't think we can comprehend it. You know, I don't think that we can comprehend what it means. I think that's how angels and demons coexist on this plane, is that they're in higher dimensions. And there's a lot of weird stuff out there. There's a lot of unexplained things. That's why I kind of snicker and laugh when I hear like Neil deGrasse Tyson tell me about like what's happening on Saturn, because it's like, dude, you don't even know what's at the bottom of the ocean, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, you're telling me that you know what's going on in another freaking planet. I mean, I get it. They've got telescopes and satellites, yada, yada, yada. But I don't know, man. I just don't buy a lot of it. I just don't buy a lot of it.
Yeah. I think that my concept of like heaven deals, you know, pretty similar with like my train of thoughts, my like philosophies on it all. Because I mean, I kind of believe that all that there is God. I mean, it kind of goes with what you were saying before. Like you question whether or not there's a past, and like how, you can question everything about reality to the point, you know. But I mean, it comes back to, I think, therefore I am.
Right.
The thing that you can trust is that something is thinking. I think that there's consciousness, I think, is a pretty solid, there's a in my head, there's a really solid argument for consciousness. And I think that if you indulge in that idea for a second, then everything else can be created by consciousness, right? You can have like dreams and hallucinations and things like that. Your consciousness can create other things. Everything about your life could be created by your consciousness, right? I think that I'm in Austin, Texas, in an apartment right now, but I could be, you know, back in Bentonville in an insane asylum, hitting my head against padded walls. Like, your entire reality can be created by consciousness. And so if there is one thing that creates everything else, isn't that the definition of God, the creator of everything? And so this idea of consciousness and God become one in my head. And I think that God is consciousness. And I think that that's the only thing in reality, is the only thing is there is God. So then you're this thing that is existing in eternity, and you only have this eternal perspective on things. And so if you want a better understanding of particular moments, say like 75 years, you branch off an aspect of yourself, of your consciousness, and trap it in the illusion of time and space so that it can only perceive that particular 75 moments in, or 75 years in particular space. And that's what I think we are. And so I think my concept of heaven and hell is just entering back into that trap being lifted.
Well, I think we're made by God, but I don't know if I think that we are God.
So, you know? I don't think that I'm God, right? I don't think that I exist. There is no concept of me. There's only a God.
But it's important. See, God has made it so important that you make a choice. There is, and He has given you free will apart from Himself, so that you can make a choice. And I think that it's something that, you know, at least in just my opinion, but that you are something that is separate from God. You are from God. You're made from God, like children. I think that's why God calls us His children, because it's a way for us to conceptualize how we could be from Him, but also separate from Him. But there is an emphasis on us, on the choice that we make. And so it's, you know, if it was just sort of all these parts of an organism flowing in different, you know, ways, and just isolating one part to have a perspective, then there's not really anything to sort of gain or lose, because it's all part of the same thing. It's going to sort of return to it. But, you know, I think that the thought of hell is very real. I think this is a kind of a good segue too, because one of the things that I want to talk about on the next podcast, as we sort of wind down on this one, and I mentioned this last time, you know, I have three kids. They're all under four. And this thought came over me the other day, you know, this, the way the world works, the way that Christianity is so demonized, not just that, but just completely, you know, everybody is always making jokes and making it seem like Christians are so, you know, silly and stupid for believing, and all the bashing that religion constantly gets and that God and Christianity constantly get. The thought, you know, occurs to me, what if one of my kids gets older and wants to rebel against me and decides they don't want to be a Christian? And then what if one of my kids never decides to be a Christian and they die and they go to hell? And the thought, now obviously this is nothing, you know, nothing I would ever take any action on, but I, you know, played through my mind of if you knew that your kid was going to grow up and go to hell, would it be better if they died when they were a kid? Because they'd be like totally assured to go to heaven. So, you know, if you're talking about eternity, our lives are blink of an eye. So is it, you know, when people talk about these like mothers, these like religious mothers that like drowned all their kids, and they go, well, what the hell was she thinking? Well, there's a part of me that I would never hurt my kids. And I think that there's a reason that God, I think there's a reason that again, for the choice. And I think that it would be a very bad thing to try to step in and take their choice away from them and all that. But I sort of, I wouldn't say sympathize, but I kind of get a little bit of an understanding of how somebody could do something so awful. They're thinking, I'm saving them. because we're going to all be together in heaven forever. This life is a twinkle of an eye. It's over, but eternity is forever. And so my kids, I'm ensuring that they're going to be with me forever. Because, man, I can't fathom the concept of one of my children spending eternity in hell. It's very real to me, and I don't know if it will be real to them. I'm going to try to instill. I'm going to, you know, have them in church, and I'm going to try to give them all the values that I had. But your kids are your own people at some point, and who knows what's going to happen to me? Maybe I'm not around for their whole life. Maybe something happens and I die.
Maybe you kill your kids and go to hell.
But seriously, if I die, if I have a heart attack in 5 years and die before any of them are 10 years old, and I haven't had the chance to tell them how important it is to me, then maybe they don't. That's just such an awful thing. And so I don't want to get into it right now about it, but that's one of the things that I want to talk about next time, is just sort of a continuation. I know we spend a lot of time talking about heaven, so we don't have to talk about it the whole time, but just sort of a continuation of the idea of saving somebody that is really important to you and doing all that you can to try to bring somebody back into God whenever they've walked away or if they've never been. And you know, what it means to bring the people you love with you, into the afterlife, but also at the same time, not taking their decisions away, not taking their choices away, letting them make the choice for themselves.
So I think that even if you pass, your kids will still have a chance.
Well, I want one. I want a chance. What's your nickname, anyway? It's not really. But yeah. Anything else you want to touch on with the stuff we talked about today?
Well, I mean, just like to finish kind of what I was saying, part of the concept is that God is the one that's growing and learning through each person, instead of the person learning and figuring out and making the choices. It's multiple thousands, millions of times that humanity is growing up, and humanity is God, and humanity and all of it is God. He's the one that's growing up.
Yeah, I think that sort of takes away, I've heard different versions of this kind of theory. I had a guy that was really set on convincing me of this thing that was on Facebook, where this guy died and found out that he was just a guy who, just him talking to this God. It wasn't the God. It was
the story of the egg.
And he was just a person who had lived like a billion times. And it was the same person who was everybody. And his whole world was just him living through different experiences and different people and making different choices depending on what his perspectives are. There was no heaven, there was no hell. It was just all a sort of a thing to... But, I really do think that God does have this infinite wisdom, that God does have this, because there is also the aspect where God says that everything that's happened has already happened, and he already knows what's going to happen. The devil has already been defeated. And so there is this showdown that's going to come from the end times, where Jesus and the devil square off, but the devil's already been beaten, and that he's going to be defeated and cast into hell for eternity. And, there's also this aspect where God says that he knows everything. He already knows what's going to happen with everybody. It's where people also run into a conflict of free will of like, well, how does God know all this stuff if you get to make your choice? And again, I think it just goes beyond something that we can't fully fathom. And also, if you're infinitely, intelligent or whatever, then you could look and say, okay, well, here's all the possibilities of a given situation. And, here's what this, because people are very predictable. People don't realize how predictable they are when given situations. And if God has literally watched the billions and billions of people that have ever existed, and has seen how people over and over again do things, then it wouldn't be that hard to look and understand what was going to happen, how things were going to work. I do think that there are things that we decide that throw us off God's path, but I think He always is prepared for that. And so I don't know. I feel like that theory sort of takes away the presence and the power of God, and sort of makes, He's just sort of like God, just like one of us, just trying to get better and improve. But the Bible says God's perfect.
And, does it?
I think it does. It says,
because I don't think the Bible I don't think the Bible ever gives. I don't think the omnipotent power is ever stated in the Bible. Now, I'm not 100% on that. I'd have to do some research or whatever. But I think omnipotence came after the Bible.
Well,
because I think there's parts.
It says Psalms 18:30. This God, His way is perfect. The word of the Lord proves true. So it's the rock, His work is perfect, for all His ways are justice. A God of faithfulness and without iniquity, just and upright is He. There's another one that's this God, this way is perfect. You therefore must be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. Matthew 5:4-8. James 1:13, let no one say when he is tempted, I am being tempted by God, for God cannot be tempted with evil, and He Himself tempts no one. I think I have never seen that one, or maybe I have, but I think that's even sort of key to it, that God cannot be tempted with evil, and He tempts no one. That's a pretty interesting thing, but it kind of goes against the idea that God is learning and imperfect and whatever. If he can't be tempted by evil at all, if the devil and all his evil can't even tempt God, and God doesn't even tempt people to begin with,
the devil doesn't exist in my theory. The only thing that exists is God.
Right.
The statement that God isn't tempted by the devil would be true. Not so much that God doesn't tempt.
You think that all the evil and stuff from the world is just a different aspect of God? That God has this the kind of awful things that happen, and real evil out there, the people that kill kids and rape and mutilate people and all that, that's from God too, and this is from God, and it's just God's just fleshing all this stuff out. I
think that
sort of takes all the stakes out of the thing. It just takes all the point out of any choice.
I think that it's a pretty simplistic viewpoint to say God is good. Anything that's not good isn't God. Because who's defining what's good and bad?
Well, I think that there's a real sense of what that's trying to say. Some of the most profound statements are very simple because they're based in an eternal fact. So if you say that what's good is God, then there is a line between what's what's good and bad. So
if I were to take candy away from a baby because the baby's gonna choke on the candy, that's a good thing. But stealing from a baby isn't. Stealing from a small child, a defenseless child, is an evil thing.
Well, but I mean, you're not really stealing. If you're taking candy away from a kid, I mean, you're assuming that they somehow procured it on their own. I mean, if you're a parent, candy's not necessarily a good thing anyway. So, you know, I mean, there are some things that are sort of brutal about, you know, I mean, there are some things that happen sort of consequently.
I'm just using that as like a really basic, everybody knows that example kind of thing. It's like, I think it's all about your perspective on it. From the child's perspective.
But would you really look at somebody if a parent took a piece of candy away and go, "Oh, that evil bitch. Can't believe you took that candy from that kid. That is evil."
Would the kid? How does the kid feel?
The kid's not thinking it's evil. The kid's thinking, "Oh, I'm a kid. I want the candy." I mean, it's, you know,
that was such a bad thing. It's a really simplistic.
Well, yeah, example. I had a girl that I was with for 10 years, and she left me, and I prayed for God every day that she would come back, and she didn't come back, and it was awful. And I went through a hard and terrible time, but my life ended up being so much better because that happened. And if it had gone on for longer, or if she had come back, that would ultimately have made both of us miserable. So the greater good, sometimes there is a sacrifice of going through the bad time, but the bad time is not because of God. God didn't, you know, it's not because God is making
it, but it would have been.
It's because I wanted something that I shouldn't have had. I wanted something that I didn't need. So the want came from me. The bad came from my heart. God was doing what was right, but because of my own personal not understanding and wanting for something that was bad for me, I brought the bad onto myself.
Well, you need the bad. That's what to appreciate the good.
You don't need the bad to appreciate the good.
Yeah,
it sometimes puts things into perspective. But if I've got an infant that's born, and I don't need one of my kids to die for me to know how precious that child is. It can just be good, and I can still appreciate it.
That children die. That's a possibility.
It's
a concept that you have.
But I don't sit there and go, "Well, I'm glad I have my kids because they could die."
But you knew what it was like to not have your kids. And you know that it's a possibility for your kids to die. So you know that those things are real. But if you never knew that children die,
my kids would still be absolutely precious to my life because the good that they do me is not only in existing. It's all the other aspects of them that are love. When I look at my kids, I feel love, and that love is God. That where that pureness, that feeling, even if my kids were going to live forever and nobody ever died, nothing bad ever happened, when I looked at those kids, I would still feel that love, because that love doesn't come from evil. It comes from good. It comes from the bond that parents have. It comes from the fact that I care about my kids and that they care about me. Those are the good positive aspects of it that come from God.
What I'm saying is that you have to have both.
I disagree with you. I don't think you have to have
to you, you have because to even have to, free, to have free to, will you have to have the bad.
No, you can have two choices. One of them doesn't have to be a bad choice. I could pick vanilla ice cream. I could pick chocolate ice cream. That's a choice.
It's not
either way.
It's not a choice to believe and to choose God if both choices are God?
Well, but when in the Garden of Eden with Adam and Eve, God told them not to eat from the tree. It wasn't evil to keep them from eating the tree. It wasn't evil to have the tree there and have a boundary, a rule that they had to follow. What was evil was them breaking the rule and breaking their bond with God.
But there was evil there before they made the choice. They were tempted by evil. Evil was already there. God created Lucifer.
But he didn't create him bad. He didn't create evil. Because he's not. Because God's not evil.
Why would he create him knowing if he was omnipotent, knowing... Oh, 100% knowing that he was going to rebel?
Because there is a way that this world works for whatever reason. I don't get it, but there's a way that things work. And so for whatever reason, it has to play out. I know that's kind of a wishy-washy answer, but... Again, I think that we do experience loss. We do experience consequences for our actions. And there is an aspect of appreciating what you have because other people don't have it, or you could lose it, and all these things. That's true. There is part of the fact that even death isn't necessarily a bad thing. Now, there's plenty of terrible ways to die, and it's a hurtful thing to people around you, but death isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's actually, if you're, you know, dying and going to heaven, it's actually a really great thing, but it still makes your life sweeter knowing that there's an end to it, but that end isn't necessarily an evil. You know, there's all kinds of things that add to the sort of the sweetness of life.
That's my point, is that it's pretty hard for us to define good and evil without all the information, without the eternal view.
You're trying to make God more like you and you less like him. I think that the idea that we should be striving for is to be more like God, not to try to figure out ways that God's more like us. And saying, well, I have all these faults. I do good sometimes. I do bad. You know, maybe God is just like me. And he's got good and evil aspects to him. And he doesn't really know exactly what he's doing. But he uses human beings as a way to learn and grow and become a sort of a better God. That's trying to take God and make him more like you. When I think the idea is... that we should, you know, and God doesn't even well, maybe he does, but it's, I think, especially after the New Testament, it's more to try to be like Jesus than to be like God, because Jesus was a man. Jesus was fallible. Now, it says he didn't sin, but Jesus is the example that we're supposed to live to. We're not supposed to try to be like God, even though we are from him. But, you know, I think trying to take God and make him more understandable by trying to make him more like you, you know, I don't know. I just, I think taking the devil out of it really takes all the bite out of the whole making a choice. Because if there's no devil, if there's no hell, there's no eternity. What's the point of making the choice?
What I'm saying, there's only eternity, and like you'd still like I rape people as much as I want, as much as I want to rape people. I don't want to rape anybody. So it's like natural like compasses and stuff like that. Like there's still like you still don't want to be a shitty person if like. If everything is like going to be good, or trying to strive to be better, this is like a natural inclination. Just because
I think that the Bible does a pretty good job of explaining it's sort of a natural inclination for human beings, but that's not what we were meant to be. God didn't create us to give in to Satan. God didn't create us to sin. He kept trying to create us not to sin. But for whatever reason, he found that it is so tied into human nature to sin, even though that's the consequence of giving us free will. And even though that's not what he created us for, he created us, ultimately, he created Adam and Eve to spend time with him, be his companions, to you know, worship him, be in his presence. But he kept finding that when presented with opportunities to sin, people did, and it made him very angry. He flooded the earth. He kept, he wasn't even going to...
He flooded the earth?
Yeah. He killed wicked...
That's like a pretty good thing.
If you want to start second-guessing things that God has done in the Bible, like that you have some sort of perspective that gives you like this, what kind of God would flood the earth? I mean, if the earth was full of vile, despicable people who were absolutely evil, and God did not want his creation to be this perverted thing, at some point washing out evil. I mean, if those were just different aspects of God, then he should have written it out, wrote it out, right? And just because, there's no devil, all the evil is just coming from him. So all he's doing is having to deal with his own aspect. Why would he, why would he flood the earth there?
Yeah, to, like you said, to get rid of all the negative aspects or whatever.
But he... I don't know, man. I guess I just disagree with that. I don't like taking God and trying to put him in a... Again, I don't like trying to take God and try to make him more like me so that, because I can't conceive of something that's perfect or something that is all powerful. The whole thing of, if God can create anything, then he can create something he can't lift. But if he can't lift it, then that's not really a paradox. I don't think there's anything in the Bible that says that God is has the ultimate strength of it, of everything. I don't know that it's laid out in dimensions like that. So I think there's so many aspects of God that we can't fathom. And I think the tendency a lot of times for people when they can't understand things, they try to find ways to relate it to their own world. And with 99.9% of things, that will make something easier to understand if you can find a way to sort of relate it to a relatable situation. But you just have no concept of being all-powerful. You have no concept of being all-knowing. You have no concept of what it's like to, have the power to create, create these things. I don't think that God puts the Bible out and gives us this big lie and creates Satan out of nowhere, that there is no
Satan. I'm not saying
lie. Satan takes off his mask. It's been God the whole time. Holy. And he would have gotten away with it if it wasn't for those darn kids. I don't think that God is secretly Satan. He's also secretly Jesus. He's secretly everybody. He's you and me.
The Bible says he's Jesus. That's the idea.
He said Jesus is his son. Again, it talks about the Holy Trinity. Yeah, it talks about it, but it also talks about them being separate, but as one. It talks about Jesus being his son. That's a good way for us to understand how something came from you, is you, but is separate from you. My kids came from me. They are me. They're built of my DNA and my parts, but they're something completely separate, from me. And God talks about the Holy Spirit. Yeah, he does talk about the Trinity. It's a three thing, but it is one. And, it'd be real convoluted if we're all just little, I'm a little God ingrown toenail and you're a little God armpit hair, and you know. God's going, okay, well, I'm going to zoom into this life, and maybe he can teach me something about how I can be a better God. You know, I understand that you don't necessarily mean it that way, because you're trying to, you know, think about things and try to take a different look on it than what you've been taught. But, you know, it's borders on the line of sort of blasphemous, because you're just really taking away everything that God has revealed to us through the Bible and through teachings about him. God has given you clues to what he is, and you're saying, well, that's all bullshit. He just lied to us on that.
No, I just think that it's one aspect. I think that if
you think one aspect of God is all powerful and all knowing, and
I think one aspect of God is Christianity. I think hearing the story is hearing that it's all part of it. Everything that you ever know is part of it, but that also includes like other religions and other beliefs and other things.
See, this is where it all has to come to. This is why you have to come up with this theory, so that all the other people and all the other religions don't get excluded from it, and it's not a thing that only Christians get to do. This is how a lot of people try to rationalize the idea of eternity in heaven. It's sort of the same thing that I do with the scenario running with my kids, that you're sort of doing with all the people from the earth. You've met different people from different countries, and you know, you, well, these are good people. He's a Buddhist, but he's a good guy. This one, great person. Look, the Dalai Lama, that's a, you know, one of the greatest human beings ever. These people, how could God not let these people into heaven? And my answer to that is, I don't know who God is going to let into heaven. I know what he's told me in the Bible, but I don't pretend to know how everybody is going to be judged at the end times. You know, is God going to take into account different cultures and different aspects of religions? Are they all sort of searching for a central truth? You know, or there's a lot of religions that worship multiple gods, and that's, you know, a big no-no. God is very specific about worshiping other gods. It's a big no-no, you know, throughout the Bible, because some of those other religions existed while the Bible was being born, so he's pretty clear on it. But I'm not the kind of person that's going to condemn anybody to hell. I don't think I know how it's all going to work. I don't think any of us does. But I don't think that, you know, this is just the trap of sort of when you, I think this is sort of the trap when you start to get wishy-washy on Christianity, and you look at other things and you see other people and you think, I just don't see how this person could be excluded from heaven, or these people, I don't see how that could work. It's a legitimate question. And, you know, I think that I don't have an answer for it, but I don't need to rewrite God's existence to try to make myself feel better.
Okay. Well, cool.
See, this is what I was hoping we'd get into. We were agreeing too much on the first part of this podcast. I was hoping we'd get into some good disagreements. And see, these things, I think the more we get in and talk about this stuff is going to come out. That's why I wanted to kind of talk about some of this abstract stuff. This is sort of what I wanted to get to, because I think this is a thing that a lot of like millennial age Christians are going through. I think that there is, you know, there are so many different things that people want to entertain. There's so many different ways that people want to try to sort of deviate from the truths that are in the Bible to try to fit a bigger picture of like inclusivity or considering other cultures and things like that. And I don't think it's necessary, because I don't think that God pretty much, you know, he tells us in the Bible that we need to spread his word, that we're responsible for, you know, missionary, we're responsible for exposing people to God and all that. But he also is pretty specific, telling us not to worry about what is going to happen to somebody else. I run into this. I do another podcast. It's a political one. And there's people I don't like. And I have a tendency sometimes to go, oh, man, that guy is going to rot in hell. And I get a big check in my spirit from it that God says, don't. Don't try to think that you know what's going to happen to anybody, even the worst kind of person. And I think it's sort of a trap by the devil of getting you worried about what's going to... Again, it's one of the things that caused me to have this big worry about my kids. Because when you start worrying about not what's going to happen to you, but what's going to happen to all these other people, and the answers aren't clear, then it sort of opens your mind to maybe looking at other aspects that sort of lead you away from, you know, from the path. But at the end of the day, I don't have the answers either. I go on sort of what, you know, feels good in my spirit. But, you know, I think it's a legitimate concern on the one hand, caring about what's, you know, the fate of many, many billions of people throughout the world. But I also think that it is a sort of like a quicksand that opens you up to, you know, sort of getting away from the truth of it.
I think that you're like kind of taking that perspective and like kind of putting that like blanket over like everything that I'm like talking about and thinking that like the everything that I'm doing is just to try to like save other people and like include for other people.
Well, it's just like, you're just getting this from something that you thought of in your mind. You have no scriptural basis. You have no, there's nothing that anybody has ever studied and thought about that comes to this conclusion. This is just sort of a theory that you came up with. And, you know, again, I think it's completely justifiable and admirable to contemplate these bigger ideas and to try to come up with a better understanding. But it's like when you start just making up your own theories and thinking, well, this is probably how it works. I think there's a danger in that. I don't know. It's because it's not based in any sort of reality. It's just sort of cobbled together from your own experiences. And there's plenty of religions that are offshoots of Christianity where, you know, Christianity didn't quite work for somebody and they thought about it and they sort of came up with this alternate thing that works a little bit better with how they feel the world works. And I don't think it's, I'm not, you know, trying to like say that you're wrong for trying to think about different things and try to think about other aspects, but you know, I would just caution you that there's all kinds of possibilities out there, sure, but you know, just sort of making something up and then believing that is truth, that there's something that maybe that's that you're trying to appease within you as opposed to, you know, what maybe the truth is. And it's really hard though, because I don't know what the truth is either. I mean, I just sort of go on what I feel like is the word of God and what he's told me.
I mean, it just kind of feels like just following what you're willing to question like the concept of like space and math and all this like scientific stuff like that and like all these other ideas, but it's like you can't.
I'm willing to question men. I'm not willing to question God. I think that's the big difference for me. I'm willing to question what a bunch of fallible human beings that don't have even a little piece of all the information together. I'm willing to question what they've come up with, but I'm not willing to question God's character, that I feel like he's been pretty clear about things in the Bible. Because again, I believe the Bible is God's word. And so if these are the things that God's told me, I've decided I'm not going to question God. But yeah, sure, I'll question Neil deGrasse Tyson. You know, I think that that's for me is the difference. I think there's a great way to question, even question your faith and question your beliefs and all that. But, you know, to come up with some of these alternate theories, you have to really just sort of discount God's own words. And I guess that's the line that I'm not willing to cross over.
I don't necessarily agree that it's God's own words.
Well, I mean, that's, you know, that's a pretty tough thing to overcome. So I, you know, if God can't even have control over the Bible, then I mean, we do have a really different picture of God. Because if God's not even able to have control over, you know, his own book, then we're talking about two very different people. Because that would be a pretty weak God if his own, if the book that is, you know, and it's not the only book that talks about God. There's the Torah, the Jewish book, and there's talking about the same God, albeit from very different perspectives. But
the Quran talks about the same God.
Does the Quran talk about God? I know it talks about Jesus as being a prophet of Muhammad.
No, it's the same. It's the same God. The Quran, the Islam is there. They get their basis because Abraham didn't wait for Isaac. He slept with the servant or whatever, and then had a son. And then so Muslims trace Muhammad back to that son.
Right. Well, and you know, I have to say that the God in Islam is sort of different than the God of Christianity. Especially if you get into like Sharia law, where they throw gay people off buildings and it's okay to kill your wife if she's cheated on you, stuff like that. Like,
I mean, I think that there's aspects of Christianity that if you had taken them to the extreme, I don't think that I don't think Christians would allow gay marriage if there wasn't a big separation of church and state in
States. And this gets into a whole different thing, and we're going to have to probably wrap this up, but yeah, I mean, I think there's I think Christians not recognizing the because marriage is a religious thing. It's, you know, it's obviously also a legal title, but it's a religious ceremony. It comes from the idea of Christianity. So, marriage isn't something that can be between two men according to, you know, what the things the Bible says. So, you know, two guys want to get married, you know, just, I mean, for me, maybe personally, two guys want to do whatever they want to do. I don't judge people. I'm not one of those people that thinks that one sin is worse than the other. But I just think that you should call it something else, because marriage is a sort of a defined thing. And there's a difference between saying gay people can't get married and saying that you can throw them off the top of buildings. You know, but again, you know, I think this is a good basis for us to have these conversations. And I think that it's, you know, it establishes how on the one hand we can be talking and be so similar in what we're saying, and then be so radically different in our concepts of even the most basic things. I mean, the concept of God is one of the most basic parts of faith. And, you know, for us to have such a radically different view, yet hold a lot of the same similar ideals and understandings of the Bible, you know, so this is, I think it's a good place, you know, I think it's a good place for us to stop tonight. And I think it's a good, you know, this is good. I'm never going to hold back my opinion of you, but you know, I appreciate the fact that you're willing to talk to me about it. I'm not sitting here judging you and thinking, oh God, Josh is, you know, so lost. He's just, you know, this thanks to this stuff. Who the hell would, you know? That's not where I'm coming from. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about it, but at the same time, I'm always going to be honest with you about what my opinion of things are, and I know that you will be that way with me. So,
for sure.
You know, there's going to be a lot of things that we come to where we'll be agreeing and then we'll vastly deviate, you know, but I think it's important to have the conversations and to understand the motivations behind the things that we believe, because we could both stand to learn a lot, you know, about that. So, is there anything else you want to say to close?
Yeah, not really. It covers it.
Well, I appreciate, you know, everybody listening, and this is, you know, this is what this is going to be. Conversations, we're going to take you where it leads us, and again, I'd love to get some feedback in. I'd love to hear what people think when they're listening. We probably don't have many listeners right now, if any at all, but probably by the time we do our third or fourth podcast, we'll create a Gmail account so that people can send us emails. It's going to be worth us trying to tweet stuff because these are so broad topics, but we'll get that done, and then we'll try not to have so much space between this podcast and the next, but the next one we're going to sort of, you know, and I want to talk about this thing with my kids, but I also think that we've really explored this a lot in this podcast. So let's try to think of maybe another idea or two to explore in the next podcast as well. And this will be a good thing as we get going and we get some listeners, we can get some feedback and have people suggest topics. I think there's just a wealth of things that we can talk about. And, you know, so anyway, but, well, I love you, Josh. I appreciate you, talking.
Love you too.
And, we'll keep doing this. And so, for everybody that's listening, thanks for joining us. And
thanks for sharing that intimate moment between brothers with us.
And we'll see you next time on the Known Unknowns. Have a good night.